Welcome back. I'm Jonathan Capehart on WNYC and WNYC.org. Oscar award-winning filmmaker Errol Morris's films are comparable to an autopsy. They are intense and exhaustive. Morris's new movie, Wormwood, starring Peter Sarsgaard, tells the story of biological warfare scientist and CIA employee Frank Olson, weaving together interviews, narrative and documentary storytelling, reenactments, archival research, and various visual elements. Morris investigates Frank Olson's death. Originally deemed a suicide decades later, is now thought to be a government cover-up execution at the hands of the CIA. Wormwood debuts on Netflix on December 15th, and we're pleased to have both Errol Morris and Peter Sarsgaard on the show today. Welcome to you both.
You get a twofer.
Thank you.
So, Errol, let me start with you. How did you learn about Frank Olson's story?
My interest in MK Ultra, the government program that is catnip for conspiracy theorists, mind control, memory replacement, the American Manchurian Candidate program. So I told Netflix I'd like to do something involving MK Ultra. I'd like to pick a story, an MK Ultra story, and I came up with Frank Olson and Peter Sarsgaard.
Well, before we talk about Peter as Frank, let's talk about Frank. Who is Frank Olson, and what was it about his story that caught your attention?
Bioweapons scientist working in Fort Detrick, Maryland. What interested me about him is how he ended up. He ended up going out a window on the 13 stories up, the Statler Hotel in New York City. And a mystery. Why? Was it a suicide? Was it an accident? Or was it a murder?
And you spent a lot of time talking with Frank Olson's son, Eric, and he, at the beginning, talks about how he could not understand how in one telling his father fell, in another telling his father jumped. And that sort of adds to the mystery here. Talk about Eric, and how did you get in touch with him?
Well, I called him on the phone.
He was eager to talk, clearly.
I don't like talking to people extensively before I put them on film. Mm-hmm. But we had a number of initial conversations, and then we arranged to shoot it, actually with 10 cameras, my first 10-camera interview.
10 cameras?
Yeah.
It's the same as being shot by none, actually. I think it feels about the same.
So, Peter, since you've joined the conversation, tell me, what was it about the character of Frank Olson that drew you to him?
You know, actually, I was talking about the film on the way over here with someone, and I said, I sort of had this realization in the car that as I was playing him, I was really thinking a lot about my own father, who, you know, was a very, very bright guy from a very small town in Mississippi and had faith in a lot of government institutions, I think. He worked for the military. And that idea of feeling like so devoted to this system that you could think you were the problem, which ends up being, you know, what I think in the movie at a certain point, I think I'm a security risk. It made me feel for him, that idea that you are the problem, you know, just the opposite of someone who blames other people.
So he had issues with what was happening, with what the government was doing.
You know, I mean, I guess this is what happens if a whistleblower doesn't speak out.
Sometimes if a whistleblower does speak out.
Yeah. But if they think you might, I think it also might be a problem.
Mm-hmm. And there's the not to give too much away, because I have a tendency like to give everything to give everything away.
You can give it movies. All away. It's okay.
Oh, that's good. The thing about this movie is there is no spoiling the suspense.
Good. So there in the first episode, they're all at sort of like a lodge type thing. There's a fire burning, and cocktails are being made, and that is when it is when the drops are put in the martinis that are being handed out, and the guy who's made them specifically hands the tainted one to Dr. Olson. Is he specifically pegged as the person to get this, to be a part of this experiment, or was that just he just ended up getting it?
Oh, I hope it's clear that I'm specifically pegged.
Making stories like this, I try my level-headed best. Of course, my head isn't really all that level. To preserve certain ambiguities. One of the great ambiguities of this story is, was Frank Olson specifically targeted? You didn't ask me, but if you did, I'd say yes. And why? There are mysteries within mysteries within mysteries mm-hmm. here. Someone asked me, I was kind of surprised by this, whether I knew exactly this whole story before I actually sat down to make it. And the answer is, of course not. There's an investigative element here. An element of not knowing where you're going, of what you're going to hear, of what's going to transpire. That's less true of drama, of scripted drama, but it's true in scripted drama as well. You should always be surprised by your actors.
Amen. Yeah.
And they never cease to surprise me.
So how did Peter surprise you?
I think my dancing surprised you. I know my dancing surprised you.
Dancing was fabulous.
Yeah, you didn't know I had that in you.
I'm Jonathan Capehart, and this is WNYC and WNYC.org, and I'm speaking with Errol Morris and Peter Sarsgaard about the movie Wormwood, which is on Netflix. It debuts on December 15th. Earlier, Errol, you said that this was a 10-camera shoot. You also said that you don't really like to talk to your subjects too much before getting on camera, and that leads me to ask you about sort of the interview. And why is the interview a cornerstone of your films? What is it about interviewing that appeals to you so much?
Certain kinds of interviews. Again, it's not knowing what you're going to hear. Waiting to be surprised. Interested in finding out something that you don't know and couldn't possibly have known in advance of the interview. I used to work as a private detective years ago. And I think there's an element. Well, I know there's an element of private detective work in what I do. You're there to find things out.
Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of trust there. I mean, if you haven't really talked to, say, Eric Olson, Dr. Olson's son, too much, you sit him in front of a chair with 10 cameras around, excuse me, and not quite sure where he's going to go. Do you know or feel intuitively in your gut that there will be gold here for you to mine?
You think there's going to be something that's going to happen.
Something very similar happens with both things, I think. You know, people, I always say, if I go and rehearse an acting scene, you know, in the trailer or at the before the read-through, I always think, all right, well, this is nothing like it's going to be, because when a camera is pointed at something, at someone, for me, as an actor, and we say, this is the moment we're having the interview, this is the moment we're doing the scene, in an hour we'll be done with it, and we'll be that will be it.
Mm-hmm.
Things happen, it just, it makes things happen. It's the energy of activation. you don't really have it without it. You could say to Eric, let's go have a conversation over coffee, and it just doesn't do the same thing.
Right. And how many hours was Eric Olson in front of these 10 cameras? Did you do it all at once? And were you there, Peter, during any of those interviews?
No.
3 days worth. And then another day much later on, 3 days at the very beginning and then a day near the very end. I keep wondering, maybe I'm making too much of this, like what is the difference between an interview and working with an actor? I'm not sure there is that much of a difference.
No.
You're trying to elicit a performance, and part of directing is learning to shut up. I think that's an important part of it, of being in a kind of position where you're expecting something, and again, you don't know what. My actors never disappointed me. Can I call them my actors?
Yeah, how do you feel about that, Peter? You're his actor.
To take the possessive here.
You know, I've said it a couple of times, but Errol, when he first, like one of our first meetings was he came to see me do Hamlet, and he said that he liked me when I wasn't talking. And I think he was right. I'll just say particularly strong when I'm not talking.
but this is radio, so it's great when you talk.
Yeah, but that's something that I was really impressed with when Errol and I met several times over the, I don't know, year and a half that it took to get this going. And we would just talk about any number of things. And when you're talking to Errol, it's one striking thing for me, because my family doesn't do this, is if there's no one talking, if there's silence for a minute, he'll wait it out. And not many people do that in life. And so I realized that he was not only someone that said he was interested in what was happening when people weren't talking, he practiced it. And I imagine this is what makes him a particularly good investigator, interviewer, director, is knowing. And I experienced it during takes. We would finish doing the scene. There are no more lines. We've done all of our lines. And now you're floating in space, and you know, either something happens or it doesn't, but almost making it a little bit uncomfortable like that, or it can also feel like taking the pressure off, is where truthful, interesting things can happen. And I think that happens with his interviewing as well.
Mm-hmm. And I should point out, and I didn't at the beginning, that this is a story that starts in 1953, when Frank Olson's death is deemed a suicide. And then you fast forward to today, and it's now deemed an execution. It's believed to be an execution. But in the little time that we have left, since this is on Netflix and it is a miniseries, Errol, I have to ask you, do you view Wormwood as a miniseries or do you view it as a film?
The nomenclature problem? is it an Ibex? Is it a new? Is it a push me, pull you?
Oh, I like that. You know, I thought those were real when I was a kid. I did.
They're not real? Is that what you're telling me?
Push me, pull me. No, I was really upset by that at a certain point. They're just llamas. That's all.
Everything in Dr. Dolittle is real. Come on now.
Okay, so
don't ruin everything for me.
This will be an enduring mystery.
Yeah.
So how about we end the interview with this very simple question. Where did the title Wormwood come from?
Well, came from a number of different sources. Came from
Hamlet.
And Hamlet mutters, "You know the play better than I do. You know it by heart."
Wormwood, yeah.
So, I lied. This will be the last question. Talk about
also,
Hamlet.
Let's not forget the Bible, Revelation.
Yeah, the Bible, yeah.
And exactly. What does Chernobyl mean in Russian?
What?
Wormwood.
Wormwood.
Huh. Well, never mind. I'm not going to ask the Hamlet question because it'll take us down a whole other road.
There's a whole Hamlet.
Yeah, there's a whole Hamlet subtext going on in there.
Oh, no. Well, I mean, that's in Eric's own book. You know, I mean, you know, he had these incredible books of collage method, this technique that he used to kind of go into his own personal history. And there's many, many references to Hamlet. You know, it's a conscious thing. It's not unconscious.
Mm-hmm. Well,
it's my quibble with Shakespeare, where he says at the end, you know, the rest is silence. And of course, the rest isn't silence. The rest is commentary. Commentary that goes on for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years and is still continuing.
Yeah.
But folks can watch Wormwood starting December 15th on Netflix. Whether it's a miniseries or a film, I can't tell you because Mr. Errol Morris won't
find out for yourself.
For God's sake.
I'm Jonathan Capewright. I've been speaking with the voluble Errol Morris, who directed the miniseries or film Wormwood, along with Peter Sarsgaard, who stars in it. Wormwood opens at the Metrograph and will be available on Netflix on December 15th. Thank you both so much for joining me.
Thank you.
Thank you.